I'm proud to say that my name appears on a new book along with Napoleon Hill's name. The book is called Truthful Living, and it's yours for the clicking. It's not just a book. It's the very foundation of Napoleon Hill's self-help legacy. His long-lost original notes, letters, and lectures, now compiled, edited, and annotated for the modern reader.
In Truthful Living, Jeffrey has captured Hill's foundational wisdom for the 21st century. These easy-to-implement, real-world strategies for life, family, business, and the bottom line prove as energizing and inspiring today as they were nearly 100 years ago.
Go to Amazon, click on the link, own the book in any format you like, but read it, study it, and put it into your life.
I did it for two reasons, and I'm being totally truthful here. I did it for you because I knew it'd make you really happy, and I did feel sorry for Philadelphia because I'd never won a Super Bowl.
Right. So it was like a mercy route.
Right? and the Patriots and Cowboys were kind of competing for legacy Super Bowls. So
you want to see them lose?
It was a three.
Right.
It was a three.
People wanted to see the Patriots.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hey, everybody, and welcome to America's premier podcast on sales and personal development, Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everyone?
I want to welcome you to our show today and tell you that Halloween is finally over. Good God.
The dentists are celebrating.
And people have more leftover candy. They have enough leftover candy to fill a truck.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. But I want to begin the show by making you aware of the fact that Thanksgiving is no longer a holiday.
Really?
That's a big declaration.
I know.
Yeah. Do you have the power to do that?
No, but marketeers do.
Uh-huh.
So let's go to Target with Gabrielle Gittimer, the 9-year-old, where they have all the Christmas stuff already out. And Gabrielle goes, Christmas stuff? It's not even Thanksgiving. And I want to challenge you that this is a 9-year-old kid who is the next generation of buyer. Don't skip holidays.
Yeah, for real.
Come on.
So when we were in New York last week, I was sitting in a networking meeting and someone stood up, someone who sells promotional products, and she said, how many of you have completed your holiday shopping? I'm like, completed holiday shopping? Who's even started their holiday shopping?
Who has a list?
If I could bring it to a little sales analogy here.
Please.
Doug Branson, our producer.
Jenna, I thought that was you.
No, that's not me.
And listen, you guys are the experts, so you tell me if I'm
off. We are the experts. That is correct, Doug.
You tell me if I'm off base here.
Okay.
But what you're referring to is what people call Christmas creep. So the holiday season is creeping further and further back on the calendar. Is there such a thing as a close creep where a salesperson is just too focused on the final step and not hitting those things that have to happen before the close?
That is correct, sir.
A great analogy, Doug.
Yeah.
Why, thank you.
Actually, a salesperson goes into a sales meeting, and I've done it myself, Jen, I'm sure you've done it. You go in thinking, am I going to make this sale today? And so you go in with that whole thing wrapped around, will this person buy or can I close this deal? And everything you say is sort of, I don't know, tainted towards the close.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the creep of the close, Doug, is you're trying to get the person to give you a buying signal, like they kind of want it. Oh, yeah, so you might want to say something like, well, how would you, if you owned it, how would you use it?
Right, or when would you like to get trained on that? When would you like your training to begin if they need training? Like,
or how bad do your people really need it? I mean, we're talking about it, but you may not have that kind of a need.
Yeah.
Oh, we got a need, all right. Okay, so the creep is there. Now, the salesperson cannot be a creep.
No.
Because if the salesperson is a creep and says something like, well, you know, I drove 2 hours to get here, that that guy's going to get thrown out. I don't care if you drove 9 hours to get here. That's part of the job. Mm-hmm. Don't whine about the – don't be a creep about the things that you're supposed to do as part of your function. What you need to do is figure out what the outcome of this person's purchase is going to be. That's the real – that's the real real.
So do you think sales – do you think stores are opening up their sales early for Christmas – because they're trying to make it easier for the customer, or because they think if they allow more time for sales, they'll get more sales?
I think this is going to be a big Christmas. I think the economy is telling us that people have a few more bucks and a few less taxes. And the retailer, knowing that they're going to fight Amazon, knowing that they're going to fight Cyber Monday, mm-hmm. they're going to try to get those dollars as early as they possibly can, and I don't blame them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, they're not doing it for our convenience.
No.
They're doing it
for their cash registers.
For their cash registers. And when you're in a sales meeting, you have to not be doing that. You have to be doing what's at the customer's convenience.
The reason that retail, even though it will be curtailed, will never go away is because many people, me included, like to see what they're buying and touch what they're buying rather than see the picture of it rotate on a screen someplace with a guaranteed, you know, you don't have to take it if you don't want it. Mm. So if they can get to the retailer prior to the Cyber Monday horse manure, that and they have the whole month to do it.
Yeah.
They have the whole month of November to do it.
So
I think that's why they're doing
it. I'm going to tell you, as a Jew, my Christmas strategy, and then—
You mean as a person of the Jewish—
You're going to Jew-splain
yes.
us?
I'm going to Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And then we'll get to our amazing guest, Kyle Wilson.
So Jen's
going to
explain this from a wholesale perspective.
Okay, let me explain to you my strategy, okay? Here's what I do, and you might want to start doing this too.
Okay.
Just saying.
Yeah.
The day after Christmas,
yeah.
I go in and buy all the leftover ornaments that I like. And I leave them in boxes until the following year. And then the following year, right before Christmas, it's like I have all this new stuff, but I bought it at 75% off.
See, that's what's ruining the retail industry. But I give you credit for that. A lot of people do that. A lot of people are frugal in their purchases. But the challenge right now for that retailer is to get some of the spend that the customer is going to plan on doing online.
That's right.
And that's, I believe that's the whole deal by the MO.
All right, let's talk about our guest.
No.
Yes.
All right.
All right. Our guest today is the one, the only, Kyle Wilson. Hmm. If you guys listened to last week's live show from Dallas, you got a brief introduction into Kyle. But today, we're going to go in depth into Kyle's history of working in personal development, his present life as a speaker and a consultant, and he's going to talk about working with the great Jim Rohn. Jeffrey,
ooh.
For those of our diehards who don't know who Jim Rohn was, give us, like, you know, the brief bio.
Philosophy drives attitude. Attitude drives actions. Actions drive results. Results drive lifestyles. That is a classic Jim Rohn quote that says, if you don't like your lifestyle, you got to go back and look at your results. And if you don't like your results, you got to go back and look at your actions. And if you don't like your actions, you got to go back and look at your attitude. And if you don't like your attitude, go back and look at your philosophy. Now, most salespeople make the fatal mistake of starting in the middle. They start with action.
Mm-hmm.
And if their attitude sucks and they have no philosophy, they're not going to take the right actions. And that's the brilliance of Jim Rohn.
It's like we've done a whole show today before the show. So diehards, your challenge on this one is to start with your philosophy and your actions. And why don't you write down this week, write down your philosophy. And if you're willing to share it with us in the Facebook group, we would love to see your philosophy in the Seller Diehards official Facebook group.
And tell me what kind of attitude you go into a sales call with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go in thinking, geez, I hope this guy's there, or I'm going to make this sale? What drives you into that sales call that will give a transferable possibility that your words and your deeds are transferable to the customer and they will want to buy from you? They will catch your enthusiasm. They will catch your attitude. They will catch your belief and they will buy.
I love it.
So all that's right. Who Jim Rohn was. And if you're looking to get something of Jim Rohn, go online and just type in The Art of Exceptional Living and get whatever it is that it costs. It doesn't matter what it costs. Get it on eBay. Get it from Jim Rohn International.
I'll put a link in the show notes for
okay, you. Okay, cool.
Okay, cool. So Kyle Wilson is coming up, and he has an awesome interview. But before we get to Kyle.
Yeah.
Let's read
a 5-star review.
Let's do it.
Okay. Neeraj writes, I've been reading Jeffrey Gitomer's books for years. Wow, that's me. On Sales, On Attitude, and now Napoleon Hill. And for those of you diehards that have not yet purchased Truthful Living by Napoleon Hill and me, you better go do it. He's funny, brash, no nonsense, and combined with Jen Gluckow's Sales in a New York Minute, who mixes in her down-to-earth persona, it's a wonderful combination that gives excellent advice in each episode. Thank you, Neeraj.
Neeraj. I love that.
Very nice. Where the hell is your 5-star review? That's what I want to know. Please, if you are a listener, if you are a diehard, we read every single one of them. You could become famous on Sell or Die. All you got to do is leave us a 5-star review. And could you please join our Facebook group? I think you'll be well, well rewarded. Okay. It's time to chat with Kyle, marketeer, speaker, and consultant, also a pretty good friend of mine. He shares a lot of thoughts on strategically promoting your brand, personal development history, and how to get somebody to raise their hand. Please help me welcome the great, let me do the jokes. Please help me welcome the great Kyle Wilson.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I'm holding in my hand, dated April 1994, the Sales Bible review copy signed by Jeffrey Gitomer.
Whoa.
So that's kind of cool.
I only have a couple of those myself. They're in the archives somewhere.
Do you want his back?
Huh? No.
Well, here's what the greatest thing about it was. 1994, my friend, and I remember the event. Mm-hmm. We met. You brought me to your house, showed me your library, and it was incredible. And we started doing things way back then. So we're going on 25 years.
Holy smoking rollies. Yeah, that's a long time.
It's a long time.
There's people that are listening to us that aren't even 25 years old.
That's good, though.
But keep this in mind, and I think this is a fair thing for me to say, because Kyle is not going to blow his own horn. Kyle was instrumental in forming a partnership with Jim Rohn and actually harnessing Jim Rohn's power. Jim Rohn was a great presenter, a great mind, America's business philosopher is how he was known. And Kyle put him into prominence through his marketing and promotional capabilities. Is that fair to say, Kyle?
Yeah, that would be true. And I'm hoping to share some of that today, some of the ideas and concepts and philosophies that made it happen.
Cool. Kyle is definitely a marketeer.
All right. So let's hear how he got into personal development. And then we can learn all about how he marketed Jim Rohn.
Yeah. So personal development. I grew up in a small town in Texas. I was never really introduced to personal development. But I was an entrepreneur and I was very much about selling and enterprise. And I didn't do very well in school. And I was actually selling drugs and all that good stuff. Someone once said, hey, to have been the president of Jim Rohn International, you must have had an amazing background, like class president. And I'm like, no, not at all.
Yeah, I used to sell the class president drugs.
Exactly. So, I never went to college and had a service station. A detail shop was my first business, then a service station. I had 10 employees, by the time I'm 23. But I moved to Dallas, sold it all, had a home, sold it all. At 26, I moved to Dallas and I went to a seminar. And the two guys presenting had worked alongside Tony Robbins. The guy putting on the event was Jerry Haynes. And I went to work for Jerry. as a seminar promoter. And within a year, we started promoting Jim Rohn again. He had promoted Jim back in the day, and he gave me a little cassette by Jim. And it's like, wow, these two guys I'm promoting, everything they're saying, I know where they got it now, right? It was all the Jim Rohn stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was so amazing. And, you know, from there, I just got hooked. Every book Jim recommended, you know, Think and Grow Rich, The Magic of Thinking Big, Richest Man in Babylon, I just started tearing it up.
What did you learn promoting Jim Rohn?
Well, what did I learn?
Like from a sales perspective.
Yeah. well, can I share a little bit about when I started, when I took the exclusive?
Please, yes.
Yeah. And some distinctions that came from that.
Yeah.
So I'd been a seminar promoter for 4 years, and I was promoting primarily Jim and Brian Tracy and Og Mandino, and I'd not met Jeffrey yet. And, 1993, I made Jim an offer he couldn't refuse, and we started Jim Rohn International. And the first thing I did is I took an inventory of what Jim had, and I call it the wheel. And the wheel was a circle, you know, kind of like a wheel on a tire. And
Wheel.
Yeah, a wheel.
Texas accent.
Yeah, I'm from Texas.
Yeah,
I'm from Texas, and that's why I wanted to say, you know, a circle. And then Jim was the hub. And then I drew out these spokes, and every spoke was a product and service. And at the time, Jim had a one-day seminar, a two-day seminar. He had a book through Simon & Schuster, and he had – no, it's actually through Prima Publishing. And he had an audio series, which was phenomenal. And that was kind of it. And I said, okay, my goal is to get people on the wheel and then take them around the wheel. Now, here's the most important thing. How do I get people on the wheel? It wasn't so much about how do I sell people his stuff. It's how do I get more people on the wheel? And this is some of the things I talk about. If you guys don't mind me going there, I talk about 7 principles of marketing and they're progressive. But the first one is that marketing is really just connecting the dots. It's not about being clever. It's not about being manipulative, I don't even like being called a marketer these days, right? Because so much BS out there. Mm-hmm. But it's really just connecting the dots. So that's number one. I have to connect the dots. Number two, it's tactics and principles. And I believe in both. You don't build a million plus list without tactics, but principles are the overriding force. And Jeffrey, you are the master at this, as was Jim. And here's some principles. Having great products, having great customer service, you know, being consistent. You were the most consistent guy I ever met, right? You had a weekly news or a weekly in the business journal, weekly mm-hmm. publication. All those things are principle-based. So that's all I did was I took what Jim Rohn already had and I built upon it. And then number three is being strategic. And, you know, what's that one thing that's going to knock down the dominoes? So I always look at what's someone's secret sauce. And Jim Rohn's secret sauce was he was profound. He was a wordsmith. He had a way of saying things. Plus, people loved him. So his advocates loved him. So from all that, I said, what makes Jim unique? So I came up with this little quote book that Jeffrey used to promote the heck out of.
Turn around. It's right behind you.
Yeah, I know.
No, take it off the shelf for just a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just turn right around. There you go, right behind you. Boom.
Yeah, so here's the thing. There was no Google list of quotes. This is 1994. Jim didn't have a list of quotes. He didn't even know what his quotes were, right? He was just so profound. But I said, this is, learn to be happy with what you have while you pursue all that you want, right? Jim just had so many amazing ways of saying things. So I said, let me take these quotes and piece them together and then let me get them out to his advocates because they will just do the heck out of it. So literally I did a hardback that had 365 Jim Rohn quotes and this all to really create this little quote book. And then you open it up to and from, and this did not exist. I swear I didn't rip this off. This did not exist. And so my whole thing is how do I get my advocates to go give these out? So network marketing, insurance, and Jeffrey, this was pre-internet, right? So when people would call our office, we'd always say, how did you get our number? 90% of the time, someone said, someone gave me a quote book, right? So I didn't try and sell these for $5. I sold them 10 for $10 and 100 for $60, right? 60 cents each, because it had my catalog in the back, right? And, you know, how you could order in multiples. And, but that really got down to, how do I get more people on the wheel and then take them around the wheel? And so for Jim Rohn, it was looking at his secret sauce and saying people loved him as well. So it was just a very unique game plan, right? And so that very first year, Jennifer, I took him from 20 speaking dates at 4,000 to 110 dates at 10,000.
Way to go.
25,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was basically building, getting more people on the wheel, right? It wasn't trying to sell the people on the wheel more. It was getting more people on the wheel first.
And it's, keep in mind, Kyle's being very nice about this. How many of those little books did you sell?
6 million. But that was viral marketing. It wasn't me selling. And I did them for, you know, Zig Ziglar. I did them for other people as well.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey, here's the key, right? Because this is sell or die. For me, selling is about fishing, right, versus hunting. And so my whole thing is, how do I get people on the wheel and just talk to them? Like, you have your weekly
get them on the hook, don't kill them. Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying, correct?
Yeah.
Give them the bait.
Right. And the bait was the book.
Will you attract who, you know, like for me, I don't have an agenda. It's like, if they want to come to an event, great. If they want to come to a inner circle, great. If they want me to coach them, great. But all I'm doing is putting out good stuff to people who are interested, and they pick what they want, which is very different than a lot of the funnels that are being taught. So the wheel is a whole philosophy about getting people on a list and talking to them and bringing great value and putting good stuff out, and then certain things they're going to be interested in.
One of the things that Jim Rohn did, and this is pretty amazing, he would talk all day for 2 days, literally all day for 2 days, never repeat himself, and never sold anything from the platform. Never said one word about his books or his tapes or anything, and people bought the shit out of it in the back of the room. Correct?
Yeah.
I mean, I carried The Art of Exceptional Living cassette tapes in my trunk for a decade. They were my go-to anytime I wanted something that would give me just a little bit of a kick in the ass. There, you could plug it in and play it any place. And
I almost remember selling you cases of at a time, right?
Yeah, it's true. I give them away to everybody.
Jeffrey would constantly, at least two different times, you promote it nationwide through the business journals, how to get a quote book, right?
Yeah.
They would fax to me, you know, back in the days, exactly. Right?
The fax back.
The fax back of a rule. But I wrote two articles about Jim Rohn and some of his quotes and what he did and how he did it. Because I was so freaking inspired that I couldn't stand not writing about it.
And I'm pretty sure, Jeffrey, when we met, you'd never heard Jim Rohn.
Correct.
I think that's the case.
That is correct. The first time I ever heard him was in Charlotte when he spoke.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
At that event that you emceed. And that always means a lot to me, too. It's like when you, Darren Hardy, different people, like I remember Harvey McKay, who's your good friend.
Yeah.
I wanted to get Harvey's testimonial for the Treasury of Quotes. And I'd met Harvey a couple of times, and me being a promoter, right? He was all over it. He'd never heard of Jim Rohn. And of course, you know, Harvey more, you know, in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. And I finally got him to go. He was going to be in Atlanta, and I had Jim speak in Atlanta. I got him to go, and he came back and he gave me the most amazing testimonial.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's the thing that would always, again, I'm into philosophy and, you know, what gets people turned on. And the fact you were so inspired by Jim, Darren was, Harvey was, that told me a lot about you. It told me you're philosophically driven. And, you know, for the Art of Exceptional Living, you and I both know it's phenomenal, right? But some people don't care for it. And I'm like, that's okay, but I'm probably not going to go to dinner with them either, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, if you can't be inspired by the information, for you diehards out there, you can go online. You can just Google in The Art of Exceptional Living. Someone's still selling it. There's probably
and the challenge to succeed as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah, the challenge to succeed, of course. But my go-to. I'm a guy who's lived his life by Napoleon Hill, by everybody who preceded Napoleon Hill, Orison Swett Marden, Samuel Smiles, you name it. Jim Rohn hit my knowledge bone. And he did it every single frickin' time without fail. And I'd like to, if it's possible, just share one story.
Sure.
I was at the Hotel Kempinski doing a seminar for some client in Dallas. And it was after I'd already become a total Jim Rohn devotee. And we had spoken together and I knew him. And, you know, so – and I see the sign says, Jim Rohn here today. I'm like, seriously? So I go where he's speaking and he was speaking to an Herbalife group.
Right.
And there were maybe 50 people in the room. And he's talking his ass off. And I'm sitting in the back of the room waiting for him to stop. And he finishes the seminar and I go up to him and I go, okay, I've been to a half a dozen of your weekends, 5,000 people in the room. How the hell do you get excited about talking to 50 people? And he said, Jeffrey, and this is, by the way, it's the only time I ever heard him out of his character because he was always in Jim Rohn, right, if right, you know right, what I mean. True. He said, Jeffrey, you never know who's in the audience. He said, one day I gave a talk to 19 people, and one of them was Tony Robbins.
There you go.
And
that's
literally
a great story, my friend.
Oh, and my blood ran cold. Because if you listen to Tony Robbins and you don't hear Jim Rohn, you ain't listening.
I got to write that down. I've never heard that story.
Solid.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, so a few years after that, 2001, I did a big three-day Jim Rohn event in Dallas, same hotel, Grand Kempinski,
yeah.
And had Zig Ziglar and Charlie Tremendous Jones and, of course, Jeffrey Gittimer and Bob Berg and some other people. And, of course, you and Charlie went on to form an amazing friendship. But that was a three-day event. The third day, and I remember, you know, I had a, you know, we had Zig there. It was a pretty pretty conservative crowd, Jim yep. Rohn, and then Jeffrey, you know, changed all that. He stretched the rubber band, I would say. But it was phenomenal. But by the third day, we had a private, it was limited to 100 people, I think.
Yeah.
It was for the
a mastermind
platinum group. VIP. Mm-hmm. And the MC who I had originally booked to do that, because he was the MC, right? And Jeffrey was a speaker, just like Jim and Zig. But the MC asked if he could bow out that third day. And so I went to Jeffrey and I said, hey, can you save us? And it was so masterful. It was just so amazingly well done, you know, and just taking something like, what's your favorite book? And making that so interesting, you know, making it so powerful. So
it's hard.
We have a lot of memories of us together over the years.
Oh, sure.
That one really stands out to me because that was a very special day in a lot of ways.
I had known Charlie Jones already for 4 or 5 years. And then at that event, we really bonded because I got a chance to spend a lot of alone time with him. And he became my speaking mentor to a point where I would go to his house and spend a day.
Yeah.
And you get to his bookstore, and Tremendous Jeffrey. He called everybody Tremendous. I'm sure he called you Tremendous Kyle. although I don't know because you were a promoter. He might.
No, we were. He would tell me he got more speaking engagements, period, through the two events I put him on film. He and I did a lot of business together. I probably picked him up a dozen times at the airport.
Yeah.
So he kissed my ear, got it all wet, exactly. you know, the whole thing.
Yep.
I have an interesting story. I think it's okay to share here. Edit it out if it's not.
Okay.
But you know, and I'm sharing this in the spirit of, I think there's some good lessons here too, but back in the day, you know, we're talking, you know, late 90s, early 2000, internet's just kind of taken off. I wasn't in the book business. That was not what we tried to do. We tried to sell big packages. Mm-hmm. And so I published Jim's 5 major pieces, The Seasons of Life. And, you know, to sell 5,000 of those books was a little bit, that could take some time because, you know, I didn't try and sell them at events. We wouldn't even promote them at events.
If right. You want a bigger package. You don't want to make $20. You want to make $200 bucks.
Yeah. If they bought the whole package, they could get a book. But it came time to order some more books. So 5 major pieces. I'm going to order some books. And I go, and I mean, it's only 100 pages, right? So I go and I get a quote on like 2,000 books, and it was, I don't know, a dollar. And then I said, well, how about if I got 5,000? Well, it dropped to 65 cents. Well, how about if I got 10,000? I thought, I mean, there's no way I'd sell it, but then I'm thinking I'm only getting 4% on my money. If it sits in my warehouse, I have a 10,000 square foot warehouse. If it takes 2 years, it might be worth it. If I can save 20%, I'll sell them. So I went and found out 10,000 books dropped to like 48 cents. Then I thought, why not? What if I got 20,000 books? You know, this is pre-internet, right?
Right.
So there's no big list.
Nope.
And it dropped to 42 cents. So I did the math. Then, and I call these God downloads. Like, this was a God download.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, right? All of a sudden, it's like, call Charlie Tremendous Jones. So I called him. I said, Charlie, listen, you have all these Amway groups. I'm about to go to the printer. How about I trade you 10,000 of my Jim Rohn books that you go sell to Amway, and you give me 10 titles that you have of 1,000 books each. So 1,000 Life is Tremendous, 1,000 Think and Grow Rich, so forth. We did it. Okay. Then I had my next book, Seasons of Life, called him. He said, let's do it. Then I did 12 Pillars, called him. He said, let's do it. Then I'm ready. And now I've built about 50,000 on my email list, eventually built 1 million. But at the time, and I was early, so I was selling. We were doing really well. So I put together a 10 book package of his I would sell for $49. So here's what's really cool, Jennifer. I'm getting my books for 42 cents. And I'm getting his books for 42 cents, right?
It's an amazing trade. Yeah.
So now I've got a package I'm selling for $49 and I'm getting his message out. And this is the tricky part of me sharing this. So we did that 2 or 3 times. And then I went and spent 2 days with him in Mechanicsburg, right? And sure enough, when he showed me his warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
There were still like 20,000 of my books in his warehouse.
No.
Yeah. And it broke my heart. I'm like, you know, dude, you can tell me no. We don't have to keep doing these. No, I'll sell them. He said, I'll sell them.
I'm
like, okay.
Yeah.
But that was a kind of a mind expanding thought. I used it multiple times. The 2004 Jim Rohn event, I turned that into a 24 DVD, 24 CDs workbook, first class, one of the all time great, you know, Hollywood film crew. And, but I could make that for about $30, right? And we'd sell it for $400. And so then I would go to Tom Ziegler and say, hey, do you want to trade Zig's big package for Jim's big package? He says, sure. And so, but I had the list. And then I would say, I just want to ask if I can buy them at cost if you're not willing to trade beyond that until I sell out my order. And then I would just blow out hundreds, right?
Wow.
And so I'm selling his $300 package that costs $28, right?
Pretty good deal.
So what's been the biggest change, like, since...
Since you could buy it for a nickel and sell it for a quarter.
Well, no, since the internet and since now there's more list competition.
Yeah. I've always been contrarian. So for me now, it's about getting people together. So I have a list. I talk to my list. But my whole goal is, how do I get someone to raise their hand? That's what I'm always saying. How do I get someone to raise their hand to come connect? So the Ron White 2-day events, we do that. It's called Memory and Marketing. And we'll have the most amazing people show up. And from there, they say, I want to join your inner circle, or I want to be part of a book project. So for me, I don't do hardly any cold selling. I'm not and I see people say, and I have like 5 online programs. So it's not that I'm an old fuddy-duddy that doesn't get it, but funnels.
Wait a minute. Those are mutually exclusive things.
But you know, funnels often are geared towards cold traffic, and someone's trying to take someone cold to hot. My whole thing is, it's going to take some time. I want to build a relationship. I want to find a way to connect. Podcasts are a great way to do that.
Amazing way to do
it. Yeah. Yeah. So some guys I coach, and, you know, it's the real estate guys, Robert Helms and Russ Gray. And they had this huge podcast, but they weren't getting people to say yes to things. I'm like, you have to create some events. You have to create some gatherings to get people together. Because when people get together, it's like butter, right? You spend a day or 2 days with a group, it's just amazing what happens. And so, you know, whatever methodology you use to get people together, whether it's, or, you know, to connect with people, whether it's Facebook Live, whether it's podcasts, your email list, you have to find a way to get them to show up in a room together. And you and I both know that's not where you're probably going to monetize it the first time. You're going to monetize it by building a relationship.
Mm-hmm. You can make a dollar, but sure, you can't make $1 million.
No. And that's another big change, Jennifer. When I was doing this in the beginning, commodity products sold. I mean, you could create a $60 product and sell a bazillion of them, right?
Yeah.
Now that's different. Mm-hmm. It's there's too much of that that's free. Like all that stuff that we used to sell, you can get for free. So the relationship is going to be built through training and more high-end type of engagement.
Wait, I want to know something from Kyle. So you've been around some of the most successful people in the world and people who have the best just attitude on the planet. What are, besides attitude, of course, what are some of the things that you see they all have in common?
That's a good question. First of all, you know, just because some of these guys are big speakers or big authors doesn't necessarily, you know, no one's perfect, right? And as we've seen, whether, you know, it's the CEO of a big company, whether it's, you know, leaders of countries and nations and, you know, all that good stuff, that there is some of the highest respect I have are just, you know, people that excel at what they do. So I've never been, and I think that's one of the great, Jeffrey, you can appreciate this. This is one of the great reasons me and Jim did so well. I never was a groupie, ever. I was a marketer. Jim came in, I'm like, Jim, I've got 1,000 books you got to sign. You know, everyone else is just wanting to sit at the table, right? I need 1,000 books signed, right? We had a great partnership. And I think I've always been that way, right? So I can really appreciate being with Jeffrey and learning from Jeffrey. But at the same time, we were talking about how do we build something? How do we, you know, make money together? How do we impact people? And so I've never been that caught up in, you know, Jim Rohn or Jeffrey's that much better than Colonel Tim Cole or some of the people I work with. You know, everyone's amazing at what they, in other words, they all have those common things. So to answer your question, I think it's, and for me, the people I respect, they do have integrity. They're principle based. They're not trying to just churn through people. And that's a temptation. I always say, you know, my second principle is there's tactics and there's principles. Never let a great tactic override a principle. So when someone says, hey, you can Facebook message, you know, a whole list, I'm like, okay. But that kind of violates a principle for me. Like, that's not how I want to communicate. It might work, it might not work. But long-term, it's not going to work as well as doing stuff that's principle-based. And I totally believe that, right? And so for me, they're principle-based. And what I mean by principle-based is they're relational. They believe in putting out great products. They believe in having great stuff. If they say they're going to do it, they're going to do it. If they change their mind, they'll tell you, right? They're not just going to, you know, and it's okay to change your mind, but, you know, communicate, right? So, you know, that's one thing. Of course, they all work hard. Everyone's working hard. And they're students, right? That's the other common thing. They're a student. They're wanting to learn. I saw Nick Saban of Alabama the other day on it's called training camps, and he had Eric Thomas, he had Kobe Bryant, he had all the Gary Vaynerchuk, all these speakers come in, and he's sitting there taking notes, right? Here's the greatest college coach in the world, and he's taking notes. So that would be a common thing as well.
Very cool. I would also add, just for our diehards out there, Jim Rohn also loved Kyle Wilson. And when you have a partner who loves and respects you, then you have a long-term relationship.
Yes. We had a 10-year handshake. Like our partnership began with a handshake for 10 years. And that had to happen because Jim had some bad partners. You know, when he talks about back in the day. So, hey, listen, our listeners, Jeffrey, they're getting some inside information here, right?
Believe me, this is raw.
And Yeah. And so if you guys push some of those buttons, you never know what's going to come out. But in other words, some really interesting stuff right, over the years. And it's all positive, but a lot of it's just private. But, you know, he would talk about adventures and achievement. Tony Robbins, all these guys. And he said, once we were 825,000 in the hole, we shut it down. Right. And then when I made him his deal, his partner owed him 400,000. And so I knew that wasn't the approach. Hey, Jim, let's go partner. So actually I own the company. I own Jim Rohn International. I began it with, this will be my company. I'll pay you a high percentage of everything we do. And then that way you're not responsible if it makes money or doesn't make money. Every time you speak, you're going to get paid. Every time I sell a product, you're going to get paid. And I'll pay for the employees. I'll pay for the cost. And we had a handshake. Like, he wouldn't have signed a document because he had, back to being candid. I mean, he had been married 3 times. He'd had some bad partnerships, and he wasn't in the document signing business, you know, at that point in time. And so we had a handshake, and eventually I remember it was like 2004, and I'm getting on an airplane, putting on a $250,000 event. And I'm like, Jim, if something happened to you or something happened to me, you know, I have 20 employees. If something happened to me, we have to have this inked up, right? Where we have someone that can run the company like I've been running it. And so we finally inked it up, and it was good. But that's why.
That's totally great. Yeah, but no one had any qualms about doing it. The reservations were gone. Yeah. The what ifs were gone.
Yeah, the nervousness of, oh no.
Well, you'd already paid him, you know, 7 figures, and the first figure wasn't one, and he had faith in you.
Yeah,
beyond trust, right. He had faith.
Right.
I think that.
But I think for him, his first thing would be, do we really need to do this? And the answer is yes, we do.
Yeah,
because exactly. Now it's not about if something happened to you. It's if something happened to me. We have 1 million+ list. I need to have it. If something happens to me, someone can run this.
So diehards, Kyle and I have been bantering back and forth for a few years about having a weekend someplace where he and I get together and shoot the truth, even though it hurts, at a bunch of people. We haven't really settled on topic yet. But it seems like it's getting closer, Kyle. I think we should try to do something during the next year.
Maybe. I want to.
Yeah.
I think the good cop, bad cop, you would definitely be the bad cop because I'm pretty gentle.
Whoa.
I
am not the bad cop.
No, you're talking about shooting truth. I'm not really confrontive like you. I think you would be more confrontive, which is good. I'm just saying that's not my – I am kind of a – Take Jim Rohn's personality.
I'm an Eagles fan. You're a Cowboys fan. Cowboys are a bunch of sisters.
You win.
Right. They're the cowgirls is what we call them in Philadelphia.
Okay. Since you went there, I will say this.
Cut that.
I am a Cowboys fan, and I root it for the Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Of course.
Because of you.
Oh, thank you.
Because of you.
No, thank you. People were really just rooting for you, Jeffrey.
I did it for 2 reasons, and I'm being totally truthful here. I did it for you because I knew it'd make you really happy. And I did feel sorry for Philadelphia because I'd never won a Super Bowl.
Right. So it was like a mercy route. Right?
And the Patriots and Cowboys were kind of competing for legacy Super Bowls. So,
oh, so you want to see
it was,
them
it was
lose.
A three,
right.
It was a three.
People wanted to see the Patriots lose more than they wanted to see the Eagles win.
I think it was both. And the quarterback for the Super Bowl was Nick Foles.
Yeah.
And my high school, not my high school, but the high school my kids went to, they won 5 state championships in 6 years. And we played Nick Foles as a senior.
Oh, wow.
And we won that. And what would have been really interesting is if New Orleans and Philly had played in the NFC championship, both quarterbacks went to Austin Westlake, which is kind of interesting to me being a Texas high school sports fan.
Yeah, because, Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, I actually have a company called Lessons from Sports, and it all began because I interviewed that same high school coach, the Southlake coach, Todd Hodge.
Yeah, oh, cool. Yeah, that's totally cool. Yeah. I, of course, am a diehard Eagles fan. The diehards should know that I'm a diehard Eagles fan. But when you root for your team, it's a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And that passion permeates. If you're a passionate person, like when I went to see Jim Rohn speak, I'm not going to sit in the audience. I'm going to get there early and sit in the front row.
Right.
Isn't that the best place to see him?
Yeah, 100%. You and Darren. Darren was the same.
Yep. We're sitting in the front row and literally learning for 16 hours multiple times.
That's very cool.
Like how who does that?
No, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned passion. Do you mind if I do a shameless plug?
No, go for it.
So Jennifer, this is a book I published 2 years ago called Passionistas.
Oh yeah. Ooh.
And it has 40 amazing women. I'd love to send you one. And then here's another one I did, Purpose, Passion, and Profit. And Jeffrey, I got to get you in one of these. This has Keith Elias, who played in the NFL, runs the Retired NFL Players Association. Seth Mosley, 2-time Grammy winner. He's only 30. Robert Helms, the guy I mentioned with the podcast.
Yep.
Amazing people. They're all kind of part of my little network of world. But
who publishes the book?
I do. I have lessons from. So it's,
oh, cool.
It's, yeah. So I've done six. I did Mom and Dadpreneurs, Little Black Book of Fitness. And on each one of them, I have a celebrity authority aspect. We have like 5 different celebrity authorities in the book. And we're really picky about the stories. You know, I did Chicken Soup for the Entrepreneur Soul back in the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really, that was a secret sauce of Chicken Soup, was the stories had to be really, really good. And most of these are not. So like this last book, 30 days later, we were still number one in over 20 categories on Amazon because the turn pages and the referrals were so good. Something can't be viral if it's not good. That's back to principle-based marketing. You know, people are into tactics and they miss that having a good product's the most important thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally true.
In good customer service, right? They spend hundreds of millions to get a customer and then they have lousy customer service, which I have one of your books on customer service, right?
Yep, exactly.
Hey, this has been great. Where should people find more information about you?
Yeah, kylewilson.com. And I have a free book called 52 Lessons I Learned from Jim Rohn and Other Legends. Jeffrey's in it. Jeffrey, ooh. I share one of your lessons I learned from you. And of course, Jim Rohn and Dennis Waitley and Zig and Les Brown and Darren Hardy and quite a few people. And it's just collaborations I did with people. And, you know, Jeffrey, I talk about your rock, paper, scissors. You know, it's a great story and one of my favorites. And I talk about meeting you in 94 and, you know, going through your library. And so they can go to kylewilson.com. And if they want to get the ebook, they can go to Kyle Wilson 52 Lessons.
So I guess the big question is, Jen, after that, I think, exceptionally informative talk was, why do you surround yourself with great people? And if you should surround yourself with great people, who are you surrounding yourself with? I think that's the real deal.
Well, it's interesting. No one ever says surround yourself with shit people.
That's like, true.
That's like,
hey, I'm hanging around with a doofus this afternoon. I want everybody to come over and meet the guy. He's a jackass. He's kind of a drunk, but he does put on a neat appearance.
Right. Like, it's pretty obvious, right, that you want to surround yourself by great people, but most people aren't as intentional as I think they should be with who they surround themselves with. You sort of surround yourself with your family. You surround yourself with friends you've grown up with or people you've met through business. But a lot of times you don't think about who are the people that are in the next level that I'm in and how do I begin to surround myself with them.
That reminds me of a book. In the book Truthful Living by Napoleon Hill, one of the chapters is the law of harmonious attraction, where Hill says, go out and meet people that are like you or better. And those people will be attracted to you because they see similar qualities. So if you have the qualities, then go out and meet the people that are as good as you or slightly better.
Yeah, so I'll give you a personal example. When I was in New York City networking after I had started my business, I joined BNI groups of people that were some like me, some ahead of me, some behind me in mm-hmm. business.
But like-minded business.
Oh, yeah. All people who really wanted to achieve and be successful. Mm-hmm. And then I joined this one group of networkers. I don't know how I got in. It was pretty cool, actually.
I like that group of
people who actually had been in the group, most of them for 20 years, really successful, established business people. I was definitely the most beginner of the group, okay, mm-hmm. the earlier stage person in the group. And every time we would meet every 3 weeks, and every time I went, it was exhilarating and it was amazing because I could hear about the challenges that they were having and how they were solving those issues. And I'm thinking, if only I had those challenges. I can't wait to get there. You know, and every week, every time I went, I was learning, and we would have one-on-one meetings and that kind of thing. But it was very intentional to join that kind of group because I needed to be surrounded with people who are at the next level.
That reminds me of an incident that I had with great people. Back in the 70s, I went to a rock concert in a small theater, and I turned to my wife at the time and said, we can do this. You go get a band, you rent a hall, and you put on a concert. So I went to New York City, and I went to ABC or something. I can't remember the liar drug addicts people that were running the thing at the time, but I could buy Electric Light Orchestra for $2,500 and put on a show.
You could buy the band essentially
oh
to come and
God,
play.
Oh my God, that's
right.
Yeah,
that was their fee. Okay,
so ELO, otherwise known as.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So they're my favorite group of all time before I ever bought them. Mm-hmm. They were the move. They morphed into Electric Light Orchestra and I bought them. And they get off the plane in Philadelphia and I can meet them at the gate. I don't know whether to touch them or to hug them, shake hands with them. I had all my albums. They signed everything. We drove to Wildwood, New Jersey, which was like a 90-mile drive. And I got to talk to them. You don't know. It was I drove them in my Cadillac. It was just before it got repossessed. And literally, we became lifelong friends.
I wish you could see how happy Jeffrey is just reminiscing about this.
But here's the deal. I made friends with them because I connected with them musically. Mm-hmm. I understood their music. I knew their songs. When we got to Wildwood to do the sound check, and you know they do the – I said, can you guys play? And they did the sound check for me for my favorite songs, you know, Message from the Country and Until Your Mama's Gone. And I'm like, dun, 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 dun. And they gave me my concert.
That's cool.
Well, Jeffrey brings up another great strategy for meeting great people, which is don't do the things that everyone else does when they meet those great people.
I have your autograph?
Yeah, if you say the same things or if you talk about the same things, then you won't get a great reaction. I interviewed Del Curry, who is a basketball player.
Noel.
Yeah, he's a great basketball player.
Wait a second. He's Steph Curry's dad.
Steph Curry's dad. Okay, that's
that's
kind
how
of the,
he's known now.
Well, that's kind of the point of the story. So Del Curry played for 10 years for the Charlotte Hornets, a great player in his own right.
Oh, yeah.
But when anytime anyone interviews Del Curry, they ask him about Steph Curry.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so when we interviewed Del Curry, we asked him about, get this, Del Curry.
Yeah,
asked him about his career, and he opened up, and he loved it.
That's so cool.
He was, and I went to a lot of Hornets games early on. He was the definitive basket maker when they needed it. He was a three-point shooter, which is probably where Steph gets his whole dealy bop, but he was clutch. And when you're clutch, you're also the go-to guy.
I bet you can listen all about that on Doug's Locked on Hornets
podcast.
I'll
bet you can, too.
Well, let's put a link to that in
shameful
the show notes.
Plug.
Yeah.
Shameful plug.
No, I'm plugging it. It's not shameful. I'm proud of you. Okay, so I want to bring up one more point before we wrap this about
– go ahead.
About choosing who you surround yourself with.
Yeah.
We talked about being intentional about hanging out with great people. There's this other side of it, which is being intentional about cutting people from your life who may not be so great. And sometimes that's really hard.
Yeah, because some of them are relatives.
Most of the time, they are relatives or lifelong friends who just, you know, no longer are real friends or true friends. And so you got to think about that. Think about this week who you're surrounding yourself with, and are they really the right people for you?
So if you're a diehard, a real true diehard, get out a piece of paper and list the top three or four people that you've ever hung with. Mm. Who have you hung with that where you were in awe of the person that you and then what did you do? Did you do anything that set you apart? Did you do anything that was game changing for them rather than you just kind of wanting, you know, can you sign my picture? Can you sign my autograph? Can you sign my arm? Whatever. And then think about what was the criteria that got you there and try to repeat that so that you can get other people to be attracted to you. The law of harmonious attraction will work for you if you employ it. And if you're a true diehard and you're going for it and you want to make it to that next level, you have to hang with people that can help you get there. You cannot do it by yourself.
All right. So I love that, Jeffrey. So coming up on Wednesday, we have another sales manager spotlight. This week, it's Christian Ludwig. Ooh. Guys, this guy is on fire. He's a 24-year-old entrepreneur from North Carolina, mm-hmm. and he has a passion for providing college students with entry-level experience, really, you know, giving them sales experience, helping them, shaping them, helping them grow, helping them make money. This guy is unbelievable. He is doing more than most 24-year-olds I know. He's doing more than most 40-year-olds I know, and he's definitely a guy to listen to.
His fiance is from Paris. He is.
They're currently there, by the way.
He's a bug man.
Yeah. Well, and let's not give it away.
Okay, but he's teaching people to get face-to-face with customers and make the sale.
Yep. He's going to talk all about that. And then on Thursday, we have Tiffany Bova. Ooh. She is the Global Customer Growth and Innovation Evangelist at Salesforce. And she's also the author of a book called Growth IQ, Get Smarter About the Choices That Will Make You or Break Your Business. Ooh. She's freaking phenomenal.
I know.
Well, this is an amazing lineup this week. Friday, we have Best Of. Guys, stay with us. See you in the Facebook group. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off. Sell or diehards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend, tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.